Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. They're looking to sell 101 for this day's out. Great sales going on right now. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Cambridge 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. I know it's Tuesday, but a reminder that our Monday show is a Memorial Day we weren't on yesterday. Our Monday show is always brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Matt Leon in a few moments from KYW in Philadelphia. We were going to discuss the Phillies. They play the Nationals tonight here on News Radio 1070 WKOK beginning at 6:30. Then in the final half hour, Kenny Albert will join us from Pittsburgh, the great Kenny Albert, to talk about the Stanley Cup Final. He's actually doing it on radio side. Kenny, of course, the voice of the Rangers, NFL on Fox, does some Fox Major League Baseball games as well. He's just one of the truly outstanding all-around announcers in sports. And we'll talk to Kenny Albert in the final half hour today. Thursday, Kimberly Jones. It would be wrong for me to use the words old friend because that would indicate that Kim's old, and she's not. So how about longtime friend Kim Jones from the NFL Network is going to join us on the show on Thursday. So there's a lot to talk about. Matt Leon in a few moments, but first, I mentioned outstanding play-by-play announcers when I mentioned Kenny Albert. Mike Lang fits that bill every time. And in the moment, final 2 minutes last night, Nick Bonino and the classic of Mike Lang.
Batang in front, got a man there. Bonino shoots and scores! Nick Bonino gives Pittsburgh the lead 3-2. And Martin Jones just lost his liquor license. Penguin 3, San Jose 2 with 2:33 left.
Every time I hear that, I can't help but laugh. Mike Lang with our play-by-play call of the day. The game winner last night, in which was an outstanding and really well-played game one between the Sharks and the Pens. All right. Let's bring in Matt Leon now, KYW in Philadelphia. Matt, welcome back. Hope you had a great Memorial Day weekend.
Doing well, yourself?
Doing just fine. Hope you had a great Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, can't complain. Can't complain.
Good. Same here. Okay. There'll be no complaints about the Phillies. They've done just fine. They've got Washington coming up tonight. As this thing progresses, what are you seeing more of now, maybe in the last couple of weeks? Because they're still over 500, but what are you seeing more of now that indicates that the boat has the leaks everybody thought it might have?
Yeah, it's starting to take on water. The big difference is just they don't score enough runs.
Yeah.
And they were, and that's going to be, I think, a common theme throughout the rest of the season. They are, I mean, what is today, May 31st?
Yeah.
Steve, they still haven't scored more than 3 runs in an inning. Think about that.
Right. Well, and here's the other part. Okay, you and I both know the Braves have a really lousy offense, right?
Yep.
The Phillies have scored 2 more runs than they have.
Yeah. So, when they were, I think their high watermark was 7 over .500, mm-hmm. and people were saying it can't continue. And the rational side of you understood that.
Right.
That if you just watch the games, they were finding ways to win a lot of games. When you win a lot of one-run games, that tends to even out. But then you also said, hey, you know what, second, third week in May, if they can get this thing into the middle of June and be in kind of the same situation, who knows? Yeah. And what you've seen the last week or so on the road trip to Detroit and Chicago and just the first game last night with Washington is they're playing some of these upper-tier teams and the lineups just don't match up at all. It's such a struggle for the Phillies to put innings together. I mean, really, last night, a rally for the Phillies is a safety squeeze that scores a run. I mean, that's a big crooked number for them. So they've got a lot of problems in the lineup. A lot of it is what you knew kind of coming in. Yeah. Mikel Franco has been, he's kind of the guy that everything has to build off of, and he's struggled a little bit, specifically with consistency. He's had some big games, but then he'll go quiet for a time. And other than Odubel Herrera, who's been very consistent, they really haven't had anyone hit in the lineup. And, Ryan Howard's just been a real big void in the middle of the lineup. There's really nothing you can say. They say they're going to back off playing him and play more Tommy Joseph, but Pete McCann said that Sunday, and then Ryan Howard was batting cleanup last night, and that's just tough to overcome. You can almost write in most nights an 0-for-4 with two strikeouts for Ryan Howard. It's been really tough to watch here, specifically the last month.
Well, the contract runs out at the end of this year, right?
Yeah, it's not a money thing anymore. I don't think anyone knows quite what the end game is. He's obviously not a part of the future. I honestly don't know how much interest he has around baseball, not even taking any kind of monetary, influence into it, just from a purely baseball standpoint. He's run into a couple fastballs this year. He does, to his credit, have a couple of big home runs, a couple of home runs in 1-0 games, and he has a walk-off one, but overall, he just rarely puts the ball in play, rarely squares it up anymore. I'm not saying Tommy Joseph's an all-star by any stretch of the imagination, but Tommy Joseph has proven to be, to this point, with his, 10, 11 games in the major league, he's proven to be a capable bat, which really, frankly, right now, Ryan Howard isn't. So you've got to get a look at him, but what purpose does Ryan Howard serve sitting on the bench? Do you just outright release him? Is that how you want a true franchise legend to end? I think they're in an awkward stage right now as to how to get out of this. Because everybody else that kind of got to this point, maybe not performing this poorly, Utley, guys like that, they all had value. A certain amount of value on the open market, and you saw that when they turned around and traded him. Howard doesn't have that right now, so I don't know how that's going to end. But overall, even if Tommy Joseph plays every day, it's a team that doesn't walk a lot, so they don't get a lot of base runners. They have to string hits together. They don't run the bases particularly well, which is one of the things that's kind of surprising when you think of the way they're built. They don't steal a lot of bases. They get caught stealing a lot. They give outs away on the base paths. So they make it hard on themselves. So it's really a credit to the pitching staff and the coaching staff that they've gotten to this point where even after losing 8 of 10, they're still a game over 500.
Is it a case when you watch Howard, you say he runs into one once in a while, so let's take those couple off the table. How bad is his bat speed right now?
Oh, he I've seen him get tied up and blown away by 91, 92. I mean, there's just, he's not a threat there. They intentionally walk guys to get to him. He just hits a lot of weak ground balls to the right side, and everybody still shifts on him. So even when he does hit a one-hop line drive into right field, it's right at the second baseman because there's been no adjustment to try to push one to the left side. And that's been a criticism I've had of him the last 4 or 5 years where he would hit the ball hard right into the shift, and I understand you don't want your cleanup guy trying to hit opposite field singles.
Right.
But I think there are certain situations in a game where if you can push one onto the left side where it's wide open and kind of force a team to play you a little bit more straight up, it benefits you in the big picture. But it's something he's never done on a consistent basis. He just looks overmatched at the plate, and he doesn't walk. So it's not even Now, you've seen guys that have had batting averages and have struggles like this that are power hitters, but they still manage to get their share of walks. Mm-hmm. So at least they're a plus getting on base and turning it into runs scored. He's just basically an automatic out at this point.
Do you sense teams are pitching around Franco because of the lineup and it's making his life more difficult?
I think so, and I think he presses a little. He doesn't see a lot of fastballs, as, you know, it would almost be silly to serve him many fastballs the way the team's constructed. He's also shown some impatience. One of the things you liked about him last year was that he might not walk a ton, but he wasn't a guy up there hacking from the beginning. And I think there's a little bit of impatience because, and this is just part of the growing pain.
Sure. Right?
This is not a sound the alarm. He's not what anybody thought. It's just part of the ebb and flow of a young player, you know, kind of developing himself on the big stage. But he's had some big games, multiple homer games and stuff like that, but he's also had a lot of games where he has a lot of quiet at-bats, and, you know, teams stay away from him and, you know, force him to try to hit the ball the other way, and he'll pull off sometimes, and it's been up and down for Michael, but while he hasn't produced to the level I think people have had, when it comes to offensively, he doesn't even crack the top 10 of problems right now.
How closely do you find yourself now watching what happens at Lehigh Valley and even to some extent Reading?
Well, I think you keep an eye on it because, you know, not just are the guys down there, but for the most part they're producing. You know, you talk outfielders because right now they keep running Peter Borges out there as an everyday outfielder in right field. Right. And while he's plus defensively, he really doesn't bring much to the table at all on offense. And you see a kid like Nick Williams at AAA, a kid named Dylan Cousins at AA, who last I checked led the Eastern League in home runs and just turned the ripe old age of 22.
Right.
You know, it's easy to get excited, but I think the real advantage the Phils are in is expectations are still so low, they don't have to rush these guys up here. They can wait until they're ready. They don't have to, you know, force an issue just to try to get over a hump or anything like that. But it's gonna be interesting because I think in another month or two you might see they might bring one or two of these guys up from Lehigh Valley once they've got a half a season of AAA under their belt and stuff like that, and at least start to see. And one of the guys, and I honestly was thinking about this earlier, we forget about is Aaron Altair, who got hurt in spring training, who I would, without a question, would have been one of the corner outfielders and really would have developed. There's still a shot he could come back late in the second half of the season. And, you know, he's a legit prospect. He's not an oh-by-the-way guy by any stretch of the imagination. So you get him down the road, you know, Williams, it's going to be nothing but brighter as this season and the next few years unfold.
The Sixers will have the first overall pick as the top two teams get ready to face off in the Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The draft will be then the next event after that. There's been a lot of talk about Nerlens Noel and Jahlil Okafor. What do you think?
If it's me, I'm trading Okafor. And this isn't anything anti-Okafor. I think assuming they take, well, really, regardless of what kid they take, but assuming they take Simmons, and once again, maybe the biggest words in a sentence in the Philadelphia area, if Joel Embiid is healthy, you know, and if the Dario Saric kid comes over from overseas, you're going to have a glut of kids that need minutes in the front court.
Right.
And you're going to have to move one of them. I personally think Nerlens defensive skill set is so unique you can't part with it.
Right.
As great of a scorer as I think Jahlil Okafor is, I think right now he is a hindrance defensively, and I don't know how good he's going to be. And I think it's, frankly, in the NBA, it's easier to find guys that can score 17, 18 points a game than it is that can do what Nerlens does on the defensive side of the ball. And he's getting better offensively. He's never going to be the threat that Okafor is. I'm not saying that. But he's improved in his couple of years. So I could see them moving Okafor. I've heard some people say they could move both. I'd be surprised, frankly, if they moved both. I think you can get good quality for Okafor. Of course, it depends on what you're looking for, which no one knows. But I would actually kind of be surprised if they are both here when the season starts.
And I think if you're going to, say it is Simmons, the one thing that you would get with Simmons, I don't think he's a superstar. I really don't. I think he has. I think he's going to be a good long-term NBA player, but he's not going to be a star. But I think with him, with his skill set, he opens up the floor, and I think Okafor in combination would clog up the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a big reason why I'd move him and not Noel. Noel's skill set defensively is something I don't think you can live without.
Right, and it's just little things when you watch him, the hand quickness, the feet quickness, the ability to go from one side of the key to the other so quickly and to switch, and it's not stuff that you feel like he has to work it with. It's just it's gifts and it's instinct, and that's special in today's NBA. And to think what he could become, Embiid has to be able to play.
Right.
And I don't just mean get out on the floor. I mean Embiid has to be special.
Yeah.
If Embiid is, you know, going to be, and I hate to use this analogy, but just another big man who could never stay on the floor, if he's another Greg Oden, or if he turns out to just be another guy, then the last 3 years have been for absolutely nothing, because they're just going to be at best a middling team.
Matt, always a pleasure. Appreciate the time.
No problem. Thanks a lot.
Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. Next half hour, Kenny Albert. Thursday, Kim Jones from NFL Network as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. I texted Kevin. I said, "You're the suit," and he says, "It's too warm now, just the tie." So essentially, you know, in his world, he's almost naked. It's just a frightening image. All right, let's get the... Stop laughing, Kerry. Jeez. All right. Of course, we carry the Dan Patrick Show. And recently on the Dan Patrick Show, Demora Smith, who is the president of the National Football League Players Association, did reveal on Dan's show that Tom Brady tried to end Deflategate by making, quote, an incredibly generous settlement offer to the league, but the league shot him down. Smith said, quote, "Tom, I think, made a great offer to settle these cases. The league didn't want to do it because he refused to throw the trainers under the bus." I think he meant the equipment guys. "Look, Tom's a stand-up guy, and I think he made a settlement offer to resolve this. The league chose not to take it. That's where we are." Now, he did not reveal what it is, and nor is he at liberty to say what it is either. But he did say it was, quote, "incredibly generous." That is one thing I will say about this, regardless, is that the one area I respect about Brady and all of this is Brady has thrown no one under the bus. Think about it. What's the natural tendency of so many people to, he did it. You know, look at me. I had nothing to do with it. I mean, talk to the equipment guys. They're the ones that did it. A lot of people would say, would do that. He hasn't done it. That's one area I do admire him about in this the whole thing. Is he hasn't tossed McNally and, let's see, Jastrzemski. Those are the two equipment guys, right? Under the bus. He hasn't thrown them under the bus one time. Zero. Testifies? Nope. Meets with Goodell? Nope. Talks to the press? Nope. He's had all these opportunities to basically say, "Look, I don't know. I don't touch the footballs. I mean, they did. I mean, you know, talk to them. I don't know. I just play." He could have easily done that the entire time. He has not one time tossed those guys under the bus. And evidently, based on what Demora Smith told Dan Patrick, that part of the settlement was is that they'd have to take the hit for it, and he won't do it. He could be out of this thing easily, I guess, if he does it, and he won't do it. I'm sorry, but it doesn't matter to me. I admire how he plays. I don't really, I know him zero. I don't know him at all. As you know, I'm no fan of whatever. I'm not a Patriots fan, I can tell you that. So when I talk about pros and cons, I'm just talking pros and cons. To me, it says something that, that two guys that on the alleged totem pole of football life are on the lower end of it. All right? Some people would say are expendable. But he hasn't tossed them under the bus. Conversely, Sean and I toss the suit under the bus every chance we get. All right. Kenny Albert, final half hour to talk about the Stanley Cup final, among other things. Today, we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15 in Humble's Wharf. On News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors studio, here's Steve Jones.
Chipped up the boards by Kessel for Haglund, and now Letang to the right circle. His shot's blocked by Burns, who lost his stick. Burns without a stick. Puck now set in front for a shot. Score! Bonino! 3-2 Penguins!
Another of the many outstanding calls of Kenny Albert, who called the game on radio side last night. He is the voice of the Rangers. You see him NFL on Fox. And, of course, on NBC Sportsnet with the Stanley Cup playoffs. And he joins us from Pittsburgh. Kenny, welcome. It is great to have you with us on the show. Appreciate the time very, very much.
Anytime, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. Let's get to last night's game first off. Both teams really put the pedal to the floor. What kind of showcase of speed was that for people to see last night?
Well, it was tremendous. I thought it was a great atmosphere in the building, and the pace, like you said, Steve, was outstanding. I had the opportunity to work the West Final between St. Louis and San Jose, and you could just see the speed from San Jose. It was the key to the series against St. Louis, who has more of a plotting team. They like to set up down low. And San Jose, on the other hand, scored so many of their goals on rushes through the neutral zone, taking advantage of turnovers. And they really held the Blues to between 10 and 15 good scoring chances each game. You have game one yesterday, and the Penguins wind up with 41 shots on goal. So the speed element from Pittsburgh was a huge part of their win. And you know, hopefully we'll see more of this throughout the series, both teams looking to use their speed. And there were so many chances in the third period after San Jose tied the game at two late in the second. Both goaltenders were outstanding. It was a back-and-forth, not only third period, pretty much the whole game, and then looked like it might be heading to overtime, and Bonino scores the game winner with 2.5 left. But it was a tremendous atmosphere. The pace was great, and hopefully it's more of the same come tomorrow and throughout the rest of the series.
What was your opinion on what you saw from Sidney Crosby last night?
I thought he was probably the best player on the ice in the first period. Obviously a guy who has won a Stanley Cup before, hasn't been to the final now in 7 years since 2009. He's gone through a lot with both injuries and some disappointments in the playoffs. And the Penguins really retooled their team this year. Joe Micheletti made a great point last night during the broadcast. He said the Penguins only have four forwards remaining on their roster who were with them in the playoffs last year. So it's been a pretty big turnaround as far as their roster goes, playing with a rookie goaltender in Matt Murray. And the head coach, Mike Sullivan, a guy that I knew when he was an assistant coach with the New York Rangers. He had been a head coach with the Boston Bruins prior to that. Took a step back. He went to the American Hockey League affiliate in Wilkes-Barre this year to get back into the business as a head coach. He's been a longtime assistant, and so many of these players who were contributing for the Penguins played for him in October, November, early December in Wilkes-Barre. Guys like Connor Sheary and Brian Rust and Tom Kunackle and Matt Murray, who have been huge factors to the Penguins' success. But getting back to the original question, Crosby was great. He obviously had a tremendous second half of the season after Sullivan took over. Even earlier in the playoffs, you know, he doesn't score a goal in the Washington series, but he was a big factor. And then he winds up with 3-game winners in the series against Tampa Bay and the 4 Penguin wins. And he was tremendous again last night. I read one quote from Mike Sullivan where he said, of all the players he's ever been around, Crosby, despite the fact that he's a superstar, is the hardest worker. He works as hard as a fourth line player would. You see him down there in the corners, in the trenches. So, you know, he's a guy that obviously wants to win another Stanley Cup and got off to a great start last night in game one.
And when your best player does that, that makes a statement, because I know Jack Ham has talked about that with a young running back here named Saquon Barkley, and he said it's a big plus that he's the hardest worker that they have out there. And that's the same thing you see, obviously, with him. You saw Pavelski, obviously, every game in the St. Louis series. He didn't score a goal last night, but he has 13 in the playoffs. What's allowed him? Where's the door open for him to be such an effective force offensively?
Well, it's been a lot of fun, Steve, watching the Sharks now. I've seen their last 7 games, and that's more than I see the Sharks in person normally in 3 or 4 years, because they only play the Rangers twice per season, and their games are on TV so late. You don't see a lot of the Sharks, but it's really been a lot of fun to watch players such as Joe Pavelski, who we've also seen in the Olympics representing Team USA, played at the University of Wisconsin, and he's probably the best in the league at tipping pucks. He'll stand there at practice. We watched him last week out in San Jose. Brent Burns would fire, you know, 20, 25, 30 pucks at the net before and after practice, and Pavelski standing right there. And he scored a couple of goals in the St. Louis series on deflections, but he's become a tremendous leader. He's the captain of this team. You know, they've had some issues in the past. They took the captaincy away from Joe Thornton and gave it to Pavelski. And over the last 3 years, you know, this is something that most people, especially on the East Coast, would probably not guess is the correct answer, but Alexander Ovechkin has the most goals in the NHL over the last 3 seasons. Joe Pavelski's second. He scored 40 this year, and he's part of that line with Thornton and Tomas Hertl. And then they could throw Logan Couture out at you on the second line, who's leading the playoffs in scoring with Patrick Marleau and a young Finnish player, Jonas Donskoy. So those two top lines have been so good for the Sharks. And then the third and fourth lines have been getting the job done. They scored some big goals against St. Louis as well, and they have character players such as Joel Ward and Dinah Zubris. And then on defense, Brent Burns is a game changer. He had 2 assists last night, has 22 points in the playoffs. His partner is the former Penguin, Paul Martin, who's so steady. He was involved in the game winner last night, unfortunately, for the Sharks. A lot of depth on defense. And then Martin Jones in goal, who won a Stanley Cup ring with the Kings, never played in the final, but won a Stanley Cup in 2014, backing up Jonathan Quick, and he was outstanding last night. The Penguins scored on their 9th and 10th shots, and then they didn't score again until their 41st. So that means the Jones stopped 30 in a row from the end of the first period through the end of the third.
Joe Thornton, I think people forget, was the first overall pick in the draft when he was with the Bruins selected him, and then he was in that big trade that went out there. And then Patrick Marleau, who scored last night. They played 3,093 games in their career, postseason, regular season, and have never been to this stage. What should that tell us, Kenny, about how special this stage is and how difficult it is just to get to the stage?
Well, a couple of things, Steve. First of all, it tells you just how hard it is to get there. And there are 30 teams, and only 16 make the playoffs. You know, back in the day, when you and I were a lot younger, 16 out of 21 made it in. So it wasn't too hard to get into the playoffs. Well, now it's 16 out of 30, so it's the same as the NBA. Even though people sometimes criticize hockey for their playoff system, but it's the same exact thing as basketball. It's 16 out of 30, which means 14 teams miss every year. And then it just shows how hard it is to get this deep once you make the playoffs. And the Sharks have had some disappointments. They lost to the Kings 2 years ago in the first round after they took a 3-0 lead. And they missed the playoffs last year. They made the coaching change. And for a guy like Joe Thornton, Patrick Marleau, 1 and 2 picks overall, 97. And that draft is actually right here in Pittsburgh at the old Igloo. That's where they were, you know, first entered the NHL, Thornton with Boston and Marleau with San Jose. But I think they certainly appreciate how hard it is to get here. Marleau had been in 3 prior conference finals with San Jose, and they never got to a third win in any of those. So once they took a 3-2 lead on St. Louis, that was the deepest that Marleau had ever been, and Thornton as well. And then you look around, and Joel Ward's 35, a guy who's had a terrific playoff. Dinah Zubris is 37. He's been to 2 finals before, but has never won. Paul Martin's 35. So there are a number of guys in this team who are in the Stanley Cup final for the first time. But those two in particular, Thornton and Marlowe, we put up a graphic during Game 6 against St. Louis. They were both on the list, the top eight, as far as most regular season games in history that had never been to a Stanley Cup final. I know Mike Gartner was one of the other guys on that list, and five other names, but they were able to erase those names by finally getting to the Stanley Cup final this year.
Kenny, you mentioned in a previous answer about some of the key, quote, as you say, character players that were important for San Jose. On the flip side for Pittsburgh, give me a few of those character players that in observing them early when you saw them against the Rangers and now you saw them again last night that you think are critical components to them as to what they've been able to accomplish.
Well, as far as character, you probably have to look at a guy like Chris Kunitz up front, who's won two Stanley Cups, one with Anaheim in 07. And another with the Penguins in 09. They have some veterans on defense, you know, guys that don't get on the score sheet a lot, whether it's Ian Cole or Ben Lovejoy, character guys as well. I think Patrick Hornquist has been terrific in the playoffs. He scored a hat trick in game one against the Rangers. He had some good chances last night. He stands in front of the net like Pavelski does, looks at the deflections. You have to admire what Phil Kessel has done in these playoffs on the line with Bonino and Hagelin. Hagelin was a huge loss for the Rangers. They had it move him due to salary cap implications, but the way he uses his speed, it's a game changer, and he's been a key factor for the Penguins in these playoffs as well. And then you have the superstars, the Crosbys and the Malkins and the Letangs, who lead the way. And we mentioned some of the younger players. Sherry scored a great goal last night. Kunackel, whose father was a tremendous player, he was voted the top player in Germany in the 20th century. He played in three Olympics for Germany. He led the Olympics in scoring one year back in 88. That's Eric Kunackel, and his son Tom has been good in these playoffs for the Penguins as well. So from top to bottom, it's two great rosters. They've worked hard to get here, and like we said, hopefully this excitement of the series continues and picks up where it left off last night.
For you personally, you're really good at everything you do. I mean, you know how much respect I have for your work. We've briefly mentioned it along the way. You've gone NFL on Fox, hockey with the Rangers, baseball on Fox, and I think the first time I ever met you, you were doing the ECAC Holiday Festival at the Garden when I was in there to do Penn State. Does it take much for you to change gears, Kenny, or is it something that is relatively easy and is natural for you?
Well, first of all, that's a great memory. I did used to work some of the Holiday Festival tournaments for MSG. And by the way, before I forget, our good mutual friend Ben Bowman sends his regards. Who worked with me for, we met in the early 90s. And for the listeners, Ben's a Penn State graduate. He played hockey there and is close to the Paterno family and has ties to the hockey program. But Ben started working with me on football as a statistician and spotter. Back in 94, and we've been close for the last 22, 23 years, so he wanted me to send his regards to you, Steve.
Oh, please. Yeah, he's the best. I like Ben.
Yeah, no, he is. He's terrific. But and he's here working with Doc Emmerich. He does some of the statistical work and research with Doc Eddie and Pierre on the NBC side. But as far as the different sports, I'm real fortunate to have great people around me. And growing up, I was a hockey fanatic.
I think he faded out.
I'm sorry to say, I think we lost him.
Yeah, his battery went out on a cell.
Oh, that's fine. Okay. Hey, still appreciate the time he gave us very, very much. So,
see if we can try back.
Great to have him on. Yeah, okay. We'll try back and get him. And that was the last question I was asking him anyway. But he really is good at everything he does. I mean, like I said, my respect for him. The first time I met him was at the ECAC Holiday Festival that he did it there. And, you know, it was interesting. He was, you know, obviously, we were both a lot younger. I think that was, I want to say December 2000 is the first time Kenny and I met. And even then, I remember sitting down to do our game. He did the first game between Hofstra and, who's the other team in that thing? Penn State beat Princeton. I'm trying to remember who Hofstra beat. And then Hofstra was coached by Jay Wright, as a matter of fact. And I remember the fans were yelling down to him and the whole thing. I thought, wow, I tell you. Do we get him back there, Sean?
Calling as we speak.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that, Sean. My apologies. It was the last. It's the last question anyway. So he shifts gears with complete ease, and he's the kind of guy that if they handed him three sports in one day, he'd be able to handle all three of them in his own way and style. That would be just terrific. So, well, we thank him very, very much. You get on cells. We all know, everybody knows on cells. But we thank him for the time he gave us on the show. Last time I saw him, he was actually sitting in at my class. And, you know, he's just a first-class guy, great announcer. So, and Ben Boma, I've known Ben Boma since, oh, my goodness, I want to say I've known Ben Boma for 30 years. 30 years I've known Ben. Great guy. And no wonder he's working with Doc. Ben's really good. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
If you thought 100 years in business was impressive, SMC is going to show you 101 is even more spectacular. Through the end of May, Sunbury Motors Ford is going to sell 101 new Fords by discounting every new Ford to the lowest price possible. Plus, give you more for your trade. And they're even open Monday, Memorial Day from 9 to 1. SMC is where you want to be if you want to choose from 42 new Escapes starting at $18,880. SMC is where you want to be if you want to choose from 85 new F-150s starting at $23,749, saving you up to $11,400. SMC is where you want to be if you want 0% financing for 72 months on Focuses, Fusions, Edges, Escapes, and Explorers. Now is the time to take advantage of Sunbury Motors' goal to sell 101 new Fords in May. 101 vehicles sold means you'll save more money than ever before. Sunbury Motors and the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for 101 years.
All right, wrapping things up. Kenny, that was actually the last question I had, and that was about your ability to change gears. And so thanks for coming back on. I appreciate it very much. I mean, does it take much of anything for you to do it?
Well, I guess I'm just used to it by this point and very fortunate to be involved to different extents with all four. I've done hockey the longest, and that was really my goal. That was what I wanted to do coming out of school and was hired by the Baltimore Skipjacks of the American Hockey League and spent two great years there in the early 90s, and that led to an opportunity with the Washington Capitals and eventually with the Rangers. And a lot of our lives changed when Fox acquired the NFC rights back in 94, and they decided to hire a bunch of veteran announcers from CBS, such as Pat Summerall and John Madden and Dick Stockton and Matt Millen. But they also went with some youngsters, and myself and Joe Buck and Tom Brenneman were all hired at that time, and honored to say that we're all still there 22 years later. But as far as changing gears, I've done it for a while and really enjoy the variety. And like I said, hockey was my real passion as a kid growing up. But there's nothing like an NFL game at 1 o'clock on a Sunday. I also enjoy doing baseball and going to the different parks, working about 12 or 14 games a year. And I've had the opportunity to fill in on some Knick games for Mike Green on MSG when he has a national assignment. So enjoy the variety. Bouncing around, I guess you have to be organized and hope you don't call a goal instead of a touchdown or a wild pitch instead of the pass interference penalty. But also have been so lucky to work with great people, whether it's Darryl Johnston and Tony Siragusa on the NFL and in the past worked with Tim Green and Brian Baldinger and Anthony Munoz, among others, worked a few games with Troy Aikman. And then the opportunity to work with Clyde Frazier on the basketball side and so many of the different hockey analysts that I've worked with. So it's a lot of fun, and I enjoy the variety, and just realize how lucky I am to be involved in everything that I'm doing.
Well, you're terrific at it. You know, I have great respect for your work, as always. Thanks a lot for the time, and thanks for coming back. You didn't have to do that. We appreciate that, and hope we run into each other again shortly.
Well, sorry about the cell phone issue there, but really enjoyed it, Steve, and hopefully we'll do it again soon, and enjoy the rest of the series.
You too. Thanks so much, Kenny.
Thanks, Steve.
Kenny Albert. He really is good. I mean, some people are just really, really good about it. And you know what? His daughter is looking at a series of schools right now, and one of them is Penn State. So Kenny did bring her into our class. Really, really nice family. But it tells you everything about the guy that he would, you know, his schedule's busy, it's extensive, but they worked out a day to be there so he could tour schools with her. What does that tell you about him? So good for him. You know, he's it's something you'll also notice that's a consistent theme. You know, Kenny Albert is a high achiever. And he talked about everybody else he worked with. He talked about how lucky he's been. Because, look, to do these things, you do, you know, yeah, you have to be good to do things. But you do have to have the element of luck. And, you know, that, I mean, there's certain things. When I talk to my class, there's certain two things I tell them I can't tell you about. It's that I can't tell you about how to, you know, I can't tell you what is the one thing that, boom, that will get you a job. I can't tell you that. So number two, I can't tell you about the element of luck. And number three, I can't tell you about the ability to have chemistry with somebody when you work with them. So I can't tell you those things. Either happens or it doesn't. But if you notice, you know, we've had fortune to have a lot of people on the show, really fortunate. You mentioned Doc Emmerich, for example. How many times did Doc Emmerich mention when we had him on the show how lucky he's been to do this? You do realize how lucky you are to do something. I mean, you don't think I don't sit there every day and say to myself how lucky I am to do Penn State football and basketball? I mean, are you kidding me?
We're your home for news, sports, weather, and your home for the Phillies, News Radio 1070 WKOK, Sunbury.